turn over to page 150. I smile at this all the time to see how our song leaders are going to handle this, because the one uncomfortable thing, I've sung about this before, I know all of our song leaders probably have, but this is the one song you're waiting for the piano to come in. And there's just that short delay where we're kind of probably singing over ourselves sometimes, and we smile at that. I think it's always great to smile for hymns when we sing those, and to be happy and to rejoice. I don't know if it was a setup by the one who recorded this song or not, but when it comes up, I'm smiling all the time because I'm waiting. I'll go, okay, this is going to be really a challenge for our song leader. You want to bring it on in, and there's that pause, and then it comes in. More importantly, though, I thought this was so important, again, to remember the words that are being sung. And we know these scriptures, which is so great that we can sing the scriptures, but when you look at the first line, a new commandment I will give, when we think about that, and it really isn't a new commandment, is it? So it's one of those, what do you mean by this again? For them, if you remember, for them, it was, in a sense, a new commandment, because they were not really taught that overall principle on which the law and the prophets hang, as we've already gone through. So he said a new commandment. They probably had not heard this, so to them it was new. But look what he says, to magnify the way they lived. They were all, if you remember, they were all into the details. They had known the law. They were read the book. When you went up to the synagogue, it wasn't somebody's ideas. They didn't give sermonettes and sermons like you have today. They read from the book of the law. When you saw that the Israelites returned from captivity in Nehemiah 8, they taught them from the book of the law. And they did expound on that. That's why it took so long. But when you went to the synagogue, they read out of the law and the prophets. And there were these intricate, and not only then, but then you had the Pharisaical ideas called the Talmud that were all wrapped up, and they went through a lot more intricate details. Now, God is giving them something to reflect on. And he calls it a new commandment to magnify. He says to magnify. I explained that word, that Christ came not to destroy, but to fulfill or to magnify. This is what he's saying, to magnify the way that you live. And we can do it every day of our lives for the next 6 days. We can go out there and magnify the way that that we live. And sometimes we might take that for granted. And that might be not necessarily a good thing in a way, but to understand that for years and years now, those that have come to services, those that have read their Bibles, those that have studied God's Word and prayed and fasted and meditated, it starts to become a part of who you are and what you are. So for us even, it gets off into less of the details, though we ingrain those, it's a part of our life. So when we're out there and we surprise somebody, we're kind of surprised that they're surprised, because it's simply what we do. We're not putting on some kind of show. It's not a game to us that we're looking at all these specifics. It's just people go, well, you're so different. You're just a different breed of people. Yes, and we do keep these different days, but they're pretty much no-brainers to us. When you come down, and so many of God's people today, those that have probably been fired for a Sabbath day or for going to the Feast of Tabernacles, I remember when it became a no-brainer. When I was told, well, if you go to the Feast of Tabernacles, you'll be fired. I'm kind of going, all right. I mean, I didn't like to hear that, but it's not going to change my mind. And I mean, I couldn't even imagine that. Well, you know, I guess I'm going to have to work now and miss God's feast. That's just a no-brainer. And now we're awaiting kind of what the outcome is, aren't we? Okay, God, what are you going to do about this now? You know, you may actually save my job. In my case, he didn't save my job. And that was, again, I look back now in retrospect and saw it was the best thing that happened in my family. And so many of us look at these things as a result of this is simply what we do. Then you get circumstances that occur in our lifetime. For instance, this week, many of you may have, I believe this was on the news, and I can't remember if it was Facebook or whatever, but there was a young woman who I believe sold her virginity. For some of you may remember, $2.5 million she sells her virginity and gives the explanation on the news saying, by the way, I realize this is my body and I can do what I want with it. And I think that things are going to work out well because there are things I'm going to accomplish in my life and things that I want to do. So she's going to be committed to a person and who knows anymore who it is or what it is. but to someone in Abu Dhabi, and they actually pointed out that this was kind of an auction. So her virginity was auctioned up for sale. There was a politician involved and someone else that was involved in this exploit. So I look at that and you say, you know, do you think, here's what we understand and what we know. She's looking at this may be a small thing, but even some of the comments on the radio were that, you know, I don't think this is going to work out for, especially for the guy that's given $2.3 million. You know, this is quite a hefty price. And so they're even talking about this, but we're looking at, I think, more of this woman's life. Do you think this woman's going to be happy even if she gets to $2.3 million? I tend to think that she's not going to have a very happy life. Why do we understand that and why do we know that? We've got the principles of God's Word and God's commandments. We understand that. We understand when so many people will do this, life is not going to work out for them as they think it would be. You know, Mr. Frenchek had pointed out in his prayer that, you know, we're to live by, thank God for His Bible, for His Word, the Bible that we can look at, and we go into more of what is His Word. All the specific things that are stated in here, and then Christ Himself says, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word, every word. So it's not just one statement here or one statement there that people might pick out. We understand, we've got to understand the entirety of God's Word. It's a complete Bible that He gave to us. So we're covering some words, and we've been covering some words as far as seven words that we're going. There's more than seven, by the way. There are a lot of smaller words that have a meaning for God's law as well. But we previously seen through the previous sermons I've given and found that the law obviously has not been abolished or nailed to the cross, that the Torah, the word Torah, means guidance, direction, and instruction, and that there are at least seven words that are synonyms for Torah, for which we have covered three of these. I wonder, again, what my purpose is not that we would, because so much information is lost. I remember this was brought out at the camp directors' meetings. Somebody brought out that within so long, you're going to start losing pieces of information. And obviously, God has us go through His law and His word year upon year and year, in His holy days, year after year after year. And finally, it starts to become a way that we think and the way that we are. But sometimes we forget so much of the information. Not that you have to know the Hebrew words, but have a gist to the general idea of what God was focusing in on in the Scriptures and what we're to understand and what we will be teaching once again in the future. So again, go over these to have a deeper understanding. We went through the first word called mitzvah, if you remember. That meant what? Commandment. So God has commandments, not just 10, though. Sometimes we can be restrictive. There's a lot more commandments. Those are specific 10 commandments, yes. But in general, He will say and talk about commandments. Anything that God gives to us could be under the order of commandments. So it could even take on a broader sense of a meaning. Mishpat, another one meaning judgment. I was asked about that this week. And somebody asked about a specific instance regarding tithing, that we have to look in sometimes to what's the principle of the commandment regarding when it comes to tithing. That could be, again, tithe of tithes would be a judgment. That's been a judgment in the church over the years. The judgment regarding third tithe. And now we've dealt with things like this. Where God chooses to place His name would be another judgment. Many judgments were rendered back in the times of ancient Israel. That's why you had the elders who sat at the gates. And everyone would bring in something that was going to be totally different. And we've always had some of these stories where people would bring something that's just a little bit different. How do we judge this according to the commandment? What does He mean by this? How do we handle some of these problems and issues? It goes all the way back to the very beginning of man. There have always been judgments or mishpat that have been rendered. Another one is the eduth. These would have to do with testimonies. So we don't always have to look at specifics. We look at testimonies. How does God want us to live? You know, we've really tried to work on and focus, I realize, more on and our health. I still believe that God's people are falling short in health. It's a very difficult world that we live in today as far as being able to eat good food. Everything seems to be processed. I just learned something the other day. I'll go ahead and share with you. Now, I finally thought I found a good marinade. I looked on it. It seemed to be okay, and I was using it to marinate really tasty and really good. And then my mother-in-law had to look at the directions last night. And I looked at it, and it said hydrolyzed soy protein. Nobody ever told me that this was the equivalent of MSG. So I looked online, found about it. I go, I know it's bad. No, I can't use it anymore. Or I could, because it tastes so good, right? I could go ahead and use it. Sometimes things taste so well, and you would kind of go, well, just a little bit wouldn't be bad, would it? I mean, would it? Would that be okay? I'm trying to eat everything else organic. So would a little bit of hydrolyzed soy protein be bad for me? Well, I couldn't really be teaching the principles then, could I? If I'm going to go ahead and go, well, just a little bit of cat poop brownie wouldn't be bad, would it? If you remember the story I went through there. So it does get to the point, I think, that we've got to take a look at what we're ingesting spiritually into our bodies as well as physically as well, and make changes and try to grow and build. You can see this by the testimonies that are there, because obviously it doesn't say in the Bible, where does it say don't eat hydrolyzed soy protein? It doesn't say it. What about the testimonies that God wants us to live good and healthy lives? And sometimes we've got to look at that small little writing. You know, what's so interesting is I did a little type of research in there to look at it. The FDA has okayed this, that it's the same thing, but because you process it different and because you can call it this name, that you don't have to put this contains MSG. And I said, it's interesting. That's why I don't trust the FDA. So you can wordplay your word games around it. And doesn't this have to do with God's law as well? People play games with God's law and they try to loophole around it. And you can't. You know, when Paul said that the law was spiritual, think about that. He said the law is spiritual. What do you mean the law is spiritual? Isn't this the physical Sabbath day? Isn't thou shalt not kill, isn't that physical? Well, when you look at the deeper elements, remember what he said about thou shalt not murder? He said if you even hate your brother, the law is spiritual. It's always had a spiritual intent. That way you cannot loophole around it and think that you can maybe not hit somebody with a brick and refrain from doing that, but you can't stand the person. That's breaking that the spiritual intent of that commandment. This is what we're focusing on and taking a look at, and this is where people are going to have to be taught and changed. You know, I recognize that because I've seen that for years, what Mr. Baker had brought up today. You know, when I was a counselor in camp, you know, the worst offenders, there are not many that would come to camp, but the worst ones, you would maybe do a little probing into their background and felt they come from broken families or somebody that may have beat them. I look back at when I went through high school, and I remember the high school bully that at one point I had an engagement. You would meet at the fence if you were going to do a fight. This was actually in elementary school. Meet me at the fence. We had some kind of argument, so it's meet me at the fence. And don't forget, I was an old hockey player. So I've been through some bumps and bruises. Not that I punched people or got in fights. But I recognized, I kind of looked this guy over, and I kind of go, he wants to take it out. He's got an anger in him. So later on during the day, I kind of eased out of it. I go, look, you know, we can settle this. We don't have to do this. Oh, I got mocked by all the women who thought I chickened out. But it was worth it rather than get my face beat in, too. I mean, the guy really had an attitude and an issue. Later on in junior high school, the guy came up to me just out of thin air, came and just hit me and knocked the wind out of me. And I can't stand getting the wind knocked out of me. For those that had you bent over, you're trying to get your breath. Can't even get your breath. And I got so mad that I went after him. Thankfully, two guys blocked me because I would not want to get in a fight with this guy. And later on, he just kind of left me alone. He never did that again. I think he saw that he really hurt me. And so he didn't do that anymore. Later on, I found out that his father beat him all the time. And I just felt so bad for him. And this is what people do go through. And they're going to have to be taught, once again, that they can trust God. Maybe they couldn't trust their parents. Maybe they couldn't trust their government. Maybe they couldn't trust it, the FDA. Or someone close to them that defrauded them, or whatever it may be. But they're going to have to learn to trust God. And maybe people will see the way that you've lived, the way that we've all lived, that we've magnified, God, through what we look at and what we become and what we do. So let's continue this study, arriving at the fourth synonym for Torah. This one is called, actually it's an unusual pronunciation, it's called Kuka. And the spelling is C-H-U-Q-Q-A-H. And by the way, at the end of the series, when I finish this, I'm going to have these all printed out. I'd like for you to have reference to these, that you can look at these in your Bible and teach yourself to others that ask you, that there are a lot more than just Ten Commandments in God's Word and the applications of these. So C-H-U-Q-Q-A-H, evidently pronounced Kuka. A Hebrew person might say you didn't get that right, but I'm doing the best by what is written here. This can mean appointed, and another important word, bound. Bound. Kuka, bound. It can mean custom, manner, or statute. So this is one, I'll call this one of the big four. Within God's laws, you'll see a reference to these many different times within the Psalms, with what Abraham kept my laws, my judgments, my statutes. This is what has been in existence since God was teaching Adam and Eve his laws. Kuka, in the King James Version, you can find it 104 times. You can find it in the form of appointed one time, in the form of custom twice. So whenever you see these different words, it's the same Hebrew word kuka. You can see it in the manner of manners once, ordinance 22 times, and this is interesting because you'll find that mankind today in the United States, we use the word statutes and we use the word ordinances, but they're not used in exactly the same way, because in the United States, ordinances can change. Statutes, we've got things called the revised statutes. God does not have revised statutes. He doesn't have, for instance, as the holy days are statutes. We don't have revised holy days. We don't have revised clean and unclean food, where all of a sudden Christ came and made everything clean, as the understanding of some. That would be, those would be called revised statutes in the United States. So 22 times it's referred to as ordinance. Once as a right, and 77 times as statutes. So whenever you see this, these indications, you get these words mentioned more, you know, so many more times, you know, 77 times as a statute. It's given more to that interpretation, which we usually always have to look at if you're looking up a Hebrew or Greek. What's the emphasis put on? How does it fit within the statement that's given? It literally means something that's engraved. Something, it's established unchangeable by a lawgiver. So let's take a look at some of the statutes. In Leviticus chapter 18, Leviticus 18, once again, at least I hope we have a remembrance of this in just our natural Bible study, that if you see something repeated, you know, some of you remember twice in Ezekiel, the soul that sins shall die. Well, why did you repeat that? You know, so many times you see repetition of something that we understand that's important. It's important to God. This is mentioned over and over many times. So wasn't it to Israel? Didn't he tell Israel to love the Lord? If you're reading through the Bible and you see that, go, how many times did he say this? To love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. Repeat, 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 repeat. And something that was repeated so much, and they still never got it. They didn't understand. Leviticus 18:1, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, say to them, I am the Lord your God. According to the doings of the land of Egypt where you dwelt, you shall not do." Don't do it their way. And yet today, it seems we want to look at everybody else, don't we? I mean, more so. Isn't it more so than ever in our life? Not only do we want to do what other countries and other nations do, but we want to bring them in. Open the borders and bring them all in. So now we can worship, definitely worship, all kinds of other gods. And it's gotten so bad. But I hope that we can better understand what he was saying here. According to the doings of the land of Canaan, where I am bringing you, you shall not do, nor shall you walk in there. It says ordinances in the King James Version. You might use some other versions where it might bring out the word statutes. In the King James Version, it's recognized as ordinances. This is the same word, kuka. It's statutes. You shall not walk in their statutes. You shall observe, look what he says. Look how he responds here. You shall observe my mishpat, my judgments, and my ordinances, he says, which is the equivalent, once again, here the interpretation is statutes. To walk in them, I am the Lord your God. You shall therefore, once again, here, you shall, there, here's the repeat. He already said this. Now you see it again. Again, this should raise the question mark in our minds to go, this is a repeat. Why is he always doing the repeat? There's something he wants us to be engraved within our minds, that these are very important. Therefore, you shall keep my statutes and my judgments, with which if a man does, he will live by them. I am the Lord. So now, in the following verses, God gives specific instruction, guidance, and direction, Torah, through specific statutes. As we read, let's consider whether or not these are important and bound or engraved for the good of mankind today. These are statutes relating to marriage, specific prohibitions and enactments. And God begins with a broad statement and then gets very specific. So twice he's talked about walking in my statutes and my judgments. Now he gets into some detail. And almost you think, well, this gets, I'm sorry if this comes a little bit embarrassing, but he wrote it. He wrote it for people to see, so I'm not going to hesitate to read it. Here it says, none of you shall approach anyone who is near of kin to uncover his nakedness. I am the Lord. But look, he really gets specific. Why did he get so specific? I think he may have had an idea that they try to walk, well, you didn't say my aunt. Well, you didn't say my extended family here. He got so specific to get the point across, and we got a big problem with this today. It's called in the form of pornography and other vile sexual things that are taking place, even to the point where I saw some surprises on your faces as this woman auctioned off her virginity. I mean, this is, it's just widely put out there now that anybody can pretty much do anything, and it's okay. It's almost to the point, you get to the point where pedophilia is going to be okay. There's been talk about that. Years ago, this was years ago in the state of Washington, the U.S. Navy was talking about things that people could get away with, and it was okay. You couldn't forbid sodomy anymore. You couldn't forbid bestiality anymore. Just let the people do whatever they want. Don't have laws anymore forbidding that kind of thing. And that's how sick that this nation has become. He said in verse 7, the nakedness of your father, the nakedness of your father. I'll go through these quickly. The point eight, verse 8, the nakedness of a father's wife. So here we read of a testimony of the relationship, the oneness between the husband and wife. Verse 9, your sister, or the daughter of your father, or the daughter of your mother. Whether it's, look what he says, how specific. Whether at home or elsewhere. Why would he have to say this? Because the reasoning would be, well, she wasn't born at home. So he specified this. Consider the detail, the specificity that God instructed, understanding the nature of man to reason or loophole around God's laws. So look where he goes with this. In verse 10, the son's daughter, the daughter's daughter, these are your grandchildren. He said, the nakedness of your father's wife's daughter, begotten by your father, she's your sister. Verse 12, he's speaking of the paternal aunt. Verse 13, he's speaking of the maternal aunt. Verse 14, he's speaking of the uncle. Verse 15, he's speaking of the daughter-in-law. Verse 16, the sister-in-law, again showing here the oneness and sanctity of the marriage covenant. You know, we can look at here and see, wow, he really got specific on this. And he doesn't, we know that God would not mince words. So this is an issue that he knew that mankind would have a tendency to try to loophole around, which it's pretty much everything, isn't it, up for grabs now? That's where it's gone. And I think we all understand and know that this is a serious thing that sometimes can have implications to run over even within God's church. Verse 17, he says, "You shall not uncover the nakedness of a woman and her daughter, nor shall you take the son's daughter or her daughter's daughter to uncover her nakedness. They are near of kin." And he said, it is wickedness. Wickedness. "Nor shall you take a woman as a rival," verse 18, "to bring bitterness between her and her to her sister to uncover her nakedness while the other is alive." You know, as testimony, consider the marriage of Jacob and Leah. Yes, God allowed it, didn't he? But it was not intended according to the statutes, and it did produce. Look at the outcome. You know, it doesn't give all the particulars and all the details. Sometimes you'll watch the movie, and it gives a little bit more detail, but we really don't know. But it wasn't a marriage really of happiness. And imagine when a man married more than one wife, as was intended by God, it never did produce any kind of happiness, did it? Whether someone would say, well, David married all these other women, and God really didn't do anything. God didn't have to do any other thing. He was not a happy camper, and probably either were the other wives that were around him. Every time this happened, you find conflict. So when some even in the church of recent have said, well, I think it's okay to have more than one wife, I go, I don't think you, then you're missing out on the testimonies that God had said. And all these details, it produced sadness, rivalry, and turmoil in the family. Verse 19, "Also you shall not approach a woman to uncover her nakedness as long as she is in her customary impurity." See, this statute dealt with health and cleanliness in the camp of Israel. Whenever there was contact with blood, there was extreme detail when it came to washing and bathing. It was very important because disease could be spread easily through the blood, where it is to this day. They didn't have the running waters and the things that we have access to today. Hygiene was incredibly important before God. He continues here in verse 20, "Moreover, you shall not lie carnally with your neighbor's wife to defile yourself with her, and you shall not let any of your descendants, your children or grandchildren, pass through the fire to Molech, nor profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." It's just fascinating today when we would look at verse 21 and say, they really did that? They would bring their children and have them sacrificed to Molech? Yeah, we kind of do the same today, only it's not Molech. We go ahead and allow the doctors to go in and inject a saline solution so it destroys the fetus and we can just suck it out. Horrible. And we think that this is anything, well, it might be something different, but is it any less wicked or horrible before God? When you see the things that we do in modern day times, this is nothing. It's the same mindset and mentality that is absolutely satanic. And God laid it out before them. Why? Because he saw the tendency that something was going to attract them among the Canaanites or someone else who served God in a different way and another God. But their minds would become so distorted and so polluted that they would actually pull these stunts and do this kind of thing. It was horrible. And again, we're watching the same, if not worse, take place in our life today. Verse 22. This has obviously become natural today, isn't it? Verse 22. "You'll not lie with a male as with a woman." He says it's an abomination. That's not what our society says. That's not even what our Supreme Court says. The highest court of this land okayed same-sex marriage. And God says it's an abomination. This is a statute. It's engraved. It's not some kind of ordinance where God all of a sudden says, well, I guess it's okay to do that now. It's a modern day age. And by the way, people are born that way. And when I hear that, I'm kind of going, I don't buy that for a second. I don't care what kind of doctorate, what kind of PhD, or what's before or after your name. This is what Almighty God says. And we listen to what He says. This is a statute for all of mankind. And so we see it again. He says it's an abomination. So when some tries to explain this, I just, not so. I won't believe that. I won't buy that lie for a second. I don't condemn. We don't condemn. But we do the sin. Again, a lot of times these people have been through some very awful things in their life that have caused their mind to be perverted. Verse 23, why did he have to say this? Nor shall you mate with any animal. I mean, this is to God's people, you would think, really? You're going to have to tell me that? Yeah, because that's what they did. That's how perverted it got. Nor shall any woman stand before an animal to mate with it. It's perversion. You shall not defile yourselves with any of these things, for by all these nations are defiled, which I am casting out before you. For the land is defiled, therefore I visit the punishment of its iniquity upon it, and the land vomits out its inhabitants. That tells me, based on these being engraved statutes, that we are in big trouble. Does that not say the same thing when this land allows that? The subrogation of God's laws to okay what God says it's a perversion, and we think everything's going to go on as normal, as usual, depending on maybe who we have in office. That hasn't changed the perversions that are happening in our country. So we understand it's a matter of time, and most of us are counting the days of going, when is it? God's people are praying for the return of Jesus Christ so these things will stop and change. Verse 24, do not defile yourselves with any of these things, for by all these things are the nations are defiled, which I am casting out. For the land is defiled, therefore I visit the punishment of its iniquity upon it, and the land vomits out its inhabitants. Verse 26, so once he gets the detail, he goes back into the broader sense which he brought up. He opens it and he closes it with this. Verse 26, you shall therefore keep my kukah, my statutes, and my mishpat, my judgments, and shall not commit any of these abominations, either any of your own nation or any stranger who dwells among you. Because once you started to bring in the stranger, here's the problem. You bring the stranger in, you get all the accoutrements that come with it, don't you? I mean, in other nations you could see, I remember for some that would watch some of these peoples would stretch their ears out, wouldn't they? To the point, I mean, they're huge. They keep gauging them higher and higher. Do you know what some of our guys are doing? They're gauging their ears. They open them up wider and wider and wider and wider. Where'd that come from? It came from other nations. This is what God said. You don't do this, even the stranger. Any abomination, by definition, is something considered morally disgusting in abhorrence. He said in verse 27, for all these abominations the men of the land have done, who were before you, and thus the land is defiled. So when some think, as far as when they look at a different God of the Old Testament, because normally when Israel went in, God had them take out everybody. I mean, even the animals, because the animals had been so perverted. So they think, well, this was look how harsh he was. No, what he did is he took out the pain and the grief, and these people are going to be resurrected to a totally different way of life that you and I will be teaching them. These laws will be in existence through the millennium and after, when the rest of the billions will be resurrected as well. They're going to have to understand. And maybe they had lives that were filled with perversions. Consider the ones that were killed, that Israel had to go wipe out. They're going to be resurrected, what, with an entire different mindset? No, God's going to open up their minds, but they're going to have to be taught. this was not appropriate at all. It was morally disgusting. And God's going to help them to see this. Verse 28, lest the land vomit you out when you defile it, as it vomited out the nations that were before you. Verse 28, by the way, is a testimony, isn't it? He gave this to Israel. Were they vomited out? You better believe they were. How many times did they have to learn the lessons because they didn't follow through with God's laws? And it's also a testimony of God's mercy when you see how much he put up with all the times when Israel would do the things that he did, that they did. Verse 29, for whoever commits any of these abominations, the persons who commit them will be cut off from among their people. Verse 30, therefore you shall keep my ordinance. Now this is a word I've not even added in. You'll find this in the Hebrew. It's called mishmereth. It's mentioned one or two times. That's it. But it's defined in King James as ordinance. Just shows the many words that God uses. Therefore you shall keep my mishmereth. It means a safeguard. It means a preservation or a watch. That would put it within context. I want to preserve what I have given to you. This is a preservation that's to be continued throughout your families. You're to teach your children, and you're to teach your children's children. So when they see these other nations, they look at the other people, and look how cool this is. Well, look, it's so cool to do this, and we bring in the tattooing. It's so nice to have that tattoo, isn't it? We want one on our hip, or one on our back, or one here, because it's so cute. And God said, don't do it. Your body is holy. Don't be like the others are and think that you can loophole around it. But it's a cute thing and people don't notice it. It just starts with the cute thing and the mindset starts to go with other cute things as well. And God says, no, when he says something, you take care of your body. It's holy before me. We're to live an entirely different way of life and it's to become not just what we do, but who we are. That you do not defile yourselves. He says, I am the Lord your God. Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4. Let's go to verse 1. When you look through here, you see once again that God means what he says what he means. Deuteronomy 4 verse 1. Now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the judgments which I teach you to observe that you may live and go in and possess the land which the Lord God of your fathers is giving you. You shall not add to the word which I command you, nor shall you take from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God which I command you. You know where else that's found, don't you? You can also find that in the last chapter of the book of Revelation. He who adds or takes away from the words of this book, it's very serious that we don't do this, and I believe that a true Christian is very cautious with that. We ask questions, and that's good. Is it okay? What does God expect for me to do here or do over here? We find many different things that take place in our lives that sometimes you'll try to get a multitude of counsel on how do I handle that? How do I deal with this? Sometimes asking the question to the ministry or even going farther than that if we can't personally answer that, to go to a council, that there can be a multitude of counsel when it comes to some of the things that have been decided upon. We're taking very serious to follow through with what is the intent and the meaning of what God is saying here. In other words, follow the instructions, because every time that you think you can shortcut or loophole, deny, discredit, or disobey God's Torah, His direction, his instruction, you're going to pay a good price. This is so important that it's repeated once again in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 12, verse 28. Once again, we see the repetition. And it puts forth again the understanding within all of us that when he repeats and repeats, it's something he never wants us to forget. Now we simply, when you go back and read through it, you're going to ask yourself, how does this apply to me? What's the application here? Deuteronomy 12, verse 28. Observe and hear all these words which I command you, that it would go well with you and with your children after forever, that you do what is good and right in the sight of the Lord your God. So once again, here's an overall, doing what's good or right. We try to walk that line sometimes. Maybe some had gone through this. I remember going through this when you come into God's truth, and we maybe go to one side and we chuck it all out. And you don't have to do. There might be some things that weren't so bad that you could do. But I remember I had a collection of music. I just tossed the whole thing. It was gone. And it's not that I was listening to foul, necessarily, music, but it was a type. I wanted to learn what God liked. What did God want? And sometimes we'll all look at different music and evaluate. Do you think that's okay? And sometimes some might have gone to a concert and listened to this type of music or that type of music and evaluating and taking a look at. The only thing I know I could teach my children, because I couldn't necessarily go through. I remember when my wife and I were doing the karaoke for Winter Family Weekend, and it's very difficult to parse through all of the songs. And we thought we had it. Somebody got up and sang a song, and our hearts sunk, and we just thought we missed one. It was simply, I believe, just a word that was in there. I can't remember if it was repeated, but it was one that we're going to take a look at and go, no, it's not. I don't care if you throw one word in there. It's not appropriate. I don't want somebody else singing that word in front of God's people. So that one's got to come out. So it's very difficult sometimes for God's people to take a look at. I would say this. Look at the words. Are the words appropriate? Because obviously, you know, when people talk about, say, country western, you know, someone came up to me and said, all that country music is just, it's all divorce and I got drunk the other day and all this. And there are some very beautiful country music songs, you know, that how they esteem the opposite sex, that love their wives or whatever it might be. But it's almost like you've got to put your own collection together, which I've done. Because when I was approached with that years ago, when somebody said that, I go, no, I got a collection here of some beautiful love songs from country music singers. But then you've got to weed through the whole gamut. It could be classical music that's maybe not so appropriate. So I think the music that I would listen to before, my dad thought was an anathema. And then you come to this dad and go, that was like Herb Alpert compared to what they've got now. And, you know, but it's all an evaluation to look at what are the words that are being said. Do you think that they're appropriate, that in God's presence that they would be okay? And then listen to what the song does. What does it do? There was an entertainer some years ago that people would listen to, and I would listen to it. It would just bring me down. It was like depressing. And one person told me, goes, yeah, this guy, he's gone through all the things in his life, all these depressing things in his life, and now he just brings them to music and sings about it. I go, well, let me live in his rotten, depressed life then. Really, I want to listen to that? Yeah, I think I wanted to be depressed today. Or someone might go, well, I like to listen to that because I feel depressed and I want something, some kind of music that agrees with me. You do not want to stay depressed. I would definitely recommend against that. If you see someone like that that talks, it's depressing, don't listen to that. We need to be uplifted. And again, there's a wide variety that God gives to us that we can have different personalities. And you might like this music, and I might like that, and it might be all okay. It's simply liking eggs a certain way. You like yours poached, I like mine scrambled, but they're still eggs. It's still music, but is it good, uplifting, appropriate music before God? So I had to take a look at that early on and found out that I could actually buy a couple of those albums back that I threw out, that they were okay. But I reacted at first by just, I wanted to chunk the whole thing and relearn. And there's been a lot of learning. And I think we all can grow through that as well. So again, it's something that we have to take a look at when it comes to these examples. Verse 29 of Deuteronomy 12, and the Lord your God will cut off the nations from before you, whether you go to possess them and you succeed them and dwell in their land. Take heed to yourself that ye be not snared by following them after that they are destroyed from before you, and that you don't even ask after their gods. How did these nations serve their gods? Even so will I do likewise. Why would you even want to enter your mind into how they did that? Do you know what it does? It takes you back to the Garden of Eden. Because there was something in that made it to look like something to be made wise. Satan made it look good for some reason. And so he does the same thing today. What? In the form of Christmas. Hey, Santa, presence. Who can complain about that? And then let's stick some Jesus in there as well. And that really makes it good. God says, no, it's an abomination. So for many of us, as we've taken it, we've seen what Satan has tried to do and how he distorts it and how people still look at it today. Now, more and more people have taken a look at it, because I'll simply explain, no, why would I teach? Here's how I came to explain it. Not that I do it differently, depend again, when you consider the individual that you might be talking with. But my question would be, you know, here's what happens. You teach your children all these lies, that this is all about Christ, but there's the lie about Santa Claus and all the accoutrements that go with it. Okay, so they finally learn, no, there's really no Santa Claus, that if they really want to look at the history and what it's all about, it was based in paganism. It simply has nothing to do with Jesus Christ at all. Christ wasn't born on the 25th, and you're going to use all this reasoning. And then you come to, I tell you what, now let me teach you about God. The God that maybe allowed their mom to die, or their dad to die, or their brother to die, without the understanding why all the misery takes place in this world. And they're going to go, you know, you lied to me already. Now you're going to lie to me about a God I can't even see or understand what takes place and why. And why has this happened in my life? All the lies. Once again, in the kingdom, we're going to be dealing with people that have been lied to all their life. God does not lie. Verse 31, you shall not do so unto the Lord your God, for every abomination to the Lord which he hates, they have done to their gods. For even their sons and daughters they have burnt in the fire to their gods. The people are going to have to be healed. When they see that, they're going, what in the world have I done? Whatsoever thing I command you, observe to do it. You shall not add thereto, nor diminish from it. So as God's people, I do believe that we tend to take a look at this seriously. And I would just caution us, because of the world that we live in, that Satan is out there full force, trying to make his way look okay. You'll find that in Revelation 22, verse 14. Revelation 22, verse 14. Do not add to nor diminish from it. Let's look what he says about here. And look what's going to happen. This is destined for the future. Revelation 22, verse 14. Blessed are those who do his commandments. Now, what I don't have here for you is the Hebrew. So we can understand commandments, once again, is everything that God has said, not just his Ten Commandments. And he gets specific here, doesn't he? He gets into some statutes here. Blessed are those who do his commandments, that they may have the right to the tree of life and may enter in through the gates into the city, for without are dogs and sorcerers. That would go back to a statute saying, you don't go near that stuff. In fact, they were commanded to put to death sorcerers and witches. Well, you've got that at about every city street corner now, don't you? You can go get your tarot readings or your horoscopes or whatever it might be. Those laws are within the statutes of God that apply to this day. He says, whoremongers and murderers and idolaters and whoever loves and makes a lie. Wow. How do you get through that within our government? Basically, my understanding is, I'm not going to convict and condemn every congressman that's out there, but how difficult it must be to be in those positions and not lie. And maybe they look at it, well, but it's for the benefit of this or for the benefit of that. It's never for the benefit, is it? You've watched countless TV programs where they've shown the lie at the very beginning, and then a whole show is figuring out how to get around that lie. Verse 16, I, Jesus, says, sent my angel to testify you to these things in the churches. I am the root and the offspring of David and the bright and morning star. And the Spirit and the bride say, come. And let him who hears says, come. And let him that is thirsty come. And whoever will, let him take of the water of life freely. What would that be? That's the, again, man does not live by bread alone, right? People will be thirsting, hungering, and thirsting after righteousness. For I testify to every man that hears the words of this prophecy of this book, if any man will add to these things, God will add to him the plagues that are written in this book. And if any man will take away from the words of the book of this prophecy, God will take away his part out of the book of life and out of the holy city from which these things are written in this book. He who testifies these things says, surely I come quickly. So be it. That's the way it is. So now here we have a testimony that you can't just say one scripture and go, well, it's just written here. It doesn't apply to the rest. We already saw it all the way back into Deuteronomy. God is consistent. When he said these things to Adam and Eve, it started then. And the application was until Christ returns, and then even after that into his kingdom. Back to Deuteronomy chapter 4. Let's see an example here. We've gone through this word already, but here's an example of how God dealt with things, how he handled things. Verse 3 of Deuteronomy 4. You can keep your finger. We're going to go through a couple of what's called the Eduth. Do you remember what Eduth means? Remember, Eduth was testimony. Your eyes have seen what the Lord did at Baal Peor, for the Lord your God has destroyed from among you all the men who follow Baal of Peor. So this is a testimony, the Eduth. Let's look at, keep your finger in here. Let's go to Numbers chapter 25. Numbers 25. Sometimes God did things that some don't understand, and he did it to make an impression on Israel. When you look at all the examples to see how merciful he was, to what he had to do to try to change the minds of these people. Numbers 25, verse 1, Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab. And they called the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people did eat and bow down to their gods. When you see the testimonies of everything we just look at, it's almost like you put your head in your hands and go, why didn't they get this? I mean, to us it seems so evident. How many times he repeated this, and they kept going off and doing the same thing. And then here we live our lives, and we see all these happening in our society. I didn't grow up in this society, and many of you did not either. Oh, it was not perfect by any means. But wow, we didn't have the same things that we're confronting now. We went through our times, certainly our times where we saw things starting to get worse. But I remember the times, and you can look back and see these the pictures. Was it the 30s or 40s or wherever? When the women wore bathing suits, I think they were fully covered. And you get to the time that not much is covered anymore. So you can see the transfer, the testimony of what our nation has gone through as well, and what becomes commonplace and so-called no big deal. And that statute has to go back to don't uncover the nakedness. Well, it's not that anybody has to uncover it. They do it themselves now. The statute exists. It's still there. And some maybe have had trouble with their children. We've had trouble with our camp programs. We've got a standard of dress. We will say, nope, you're not going out there with that. And we try to teach the parents, watch what your children are wearing, because it can become a temptation to the men that are around them. And in their eyes, they might think, well, it's no big deal because everybody else is doing it. See what we have to deal with. Everybody else is doing it. Well, not here. That's not what we do. That's not God's standard. Verse 3, Israel joined himself to Baal Peor, and the anger of God was kindled against Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, take all the heads of the people and hang them up before the Lord against the sun, that the fierce anger of the Lord may be turned away from Israel. You know, that appears quite extreme and gruesome, but don't forget, it took punishments such as this for Israel to understand the gravity of their sins being committed. God knew that much worse would take place once the people gave themselves over to the other gods, such as the child sacrifices, the diseases, the broken families. Those who are given the administration of death will be resurrected to be given an opportunity for salvation under the terms of the new covenant. Verse 5, it says, Moses said to the judges of Israel, slay every one his men that were joined to Baal Peor. And behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought to his brethren a Midianitish woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of the temple. This was arrogance at its best. This was one that became so arrogant, he says, I could care less with you. And you would think, again, with all the testimonies of what they had gone through, that there's no way. The problem is once they fell into these traps of sin, it became so arrogant. And we're watching the same thing today. These things aren't hidden. Do you remember they used to be in the closet? And now they're coming out right in your face. It's not that they want you to accept it. They want to put it right in your face and say, no, you are going to accept this. And we're going to have to reply to them, you never get me to accept this. But we can see again the same testimonies. Verse 7, when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand, and he went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through her belly, so the plague was stayed from the children of Israel. And the number who died in the plague were 24,000. 24, that meant were caught up in these perversions. Now the difference that we see today, the statutes are engraved. The administration of what we do as a church is different, and I'll explain that in the future too. These elements should be done as far as the enforcement of God's statutes within a civil society should still be followed through today. We live in a civil society. People debate some of the things in the administrations of death under the civil society. God said it was okay sometimes to take someone's life under a capital crime. We've had a problem with that. We put somebody away for a capital crime and you get somebody, I just heard, somebody like Charles Manson, with the abominable things that you see that he did when he killed somebody. And the woman next to her took a fork and jabbed it through Sharon Tate's abdomen, who was pregnant at the time, and then sat down and had a meal together. And California decided at that time not to enforce capital punishment, that it was unconstitutional, but that we should pay for this man to live the rest of his life in jail, who's been up for parole 10 or 12 times and has been put back into prison. They won't let him out. God said, take him and put him out of their misery. They're going to need to be resurrected and taught a different way of life. It'd be a mercy killing. It was not something that God hates people. He hates what they do. And he's got certain laws under civil society that he gave to the children of Israel as well. Verse 10, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, has turned my wrath away from the children of Israel, why he was zealous for my sake among them, that I didn't consume or destroy the children of Israel in my jealousy. Wherefore say, give I unto him my covenant of peace, and he will have it, and his descendants after him, even the covenant of an everlasting priesthood, because he was zealous for his God. There is your testimony right there. There's something that you can get out of this that was so many years ago. The question to ask yourselves, are you and I as zealous as Phinehas was when it comes to standing up for God's law? Sometimes we can be a little bit too tolerant, as I'll read in the future something that's been mentioned recently. But there's a place and a time to do confronting as well. We need to be a people that we don't appease those who are going against God's law. And there's a time to speak up and to say something. He made an atonement for the children of Israel. Back to Deuteronomy chapter 4. Once again, here we go back to verse 4. You who are held fast to the Lord your God are alive today, every one of you. Surely I have taught you the statutes and judgments, just as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should act according to them in the land where you go to possess. Therefore be careful to observe them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples who hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is wise and an understanding people. Isn't that kind of neat when you think about that? We have a time to shine our lights. Every time we go to a Feast of Tabernacles, people see something different in the way that we just are. You know, I've seen how people are, and yes, there are people out in the world that are nice and hold the door, but I'm talking about when you get a group of people to come to one site, and basically everyone that you see, is they're just different. They're different people. We'd be glad to have them anytime when you see the Galt House, as I've mentioned before, Winter Family Weekend. I remember going through there when the first time that we were meeting in the Galt House, as opposed to another less nice facility. But you go to this place, and I'm looking at the kids coming in, I'm going, they're probably going, what have we done? And every year, we've gotten a contract with the Galt House because they see how we take care of their place. Oh, we're not perfect, and I know things that happen, but they see a group of people that are very nice, that help each other out, that keep the place clean, that don't trash it, whose children, for the most part, are in order. They see something different. That's a reflection not on us. It's a reflection on Almighty God. Verse 7, for what great nation is there that God is so near to him as the Lord our God is to us, and for whatever reason we may call upon him? What great nation is there that has such statutes and righteous judgments as are all in all this law which I set before you this day? Only take heed to yourself, and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, lest they depart from the heart of the days of your life, and teach them to your children and to your grandchildren. Whenever I see that now, I get a stronger onus whenever I see this to make sure I follow through with my grandkids. And I still follow through with my children. Because normally, once again, as you're teaching your children, you're instructing them, you've got more control on them. But once they get married, they're on their own. But how do we instruct them? By our example. Or maybe by the questions that they may have that come to us, that once again are going to be reflected on how we answer according to God's standards. Verse 10, especially concerning the day that you stood before the Lord your God in Horeb, when the Lord said to me, gather the children to me, I'll let them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days that they live on the earth, that they may teach their children. And you came near and stood at the foot of the mountain, and the mountain burned with fire to the midst of heaven, with darkness, cloud, and thick darkness. And the Lord spoke to you out of the midst of the fire. You heard the sound of the words, but saw no form. You only heard a voice. So he declared to you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, and he specified, here it is, this same Hebrew word, the Ten Commandments, mitzvah. And he wrote on them the two tablets of stone. But once again, if that's all you've done is watch Cecil B. DeMille and the Ten Commandments, I see two tablets. That's all you see coming down. It was just the Ten Commandments. And that's the focus where many people have gotten. And there was a lot more. Because you ask yourselves, which I did, why was it 40 days and 40 nights? Well, let's see why. Because it wasn't only the Ten Commandments. Look at verse 14. And the Lord commanded me at that time to teach you statutes and judgments, not just Ten Commandments. Isn't this an eye-opener? That you might observe them in the land which you cross over to possess. So Moses, for those 40 days and 40 nights, also received the statutes and judgments. He says, verse 15, take careful heed to yourselves that you saw no form when the Lord spoke to you at Horeb out of the midst of the fire, lest you act corruptly and make for yourselves a carved image in the form of any figure, the likeness of male or female. And ironically, a testimony of the carnality of Israel is where they did just that, by fashioning a golden calf at the base of the mountain. Verse 17, the likeness of any animal that's on the earth, the likeness of any winged bird that flies in the air, the likeness of anything that creeps on the ground, or the likeness of any fish that's in the water beneath the earth. And here's why. Verse 19, take heed, lest you lift your eyes to heaven, and when you see the sun, moon, and the stars, all the hosts of heaven, you feel driven to worship them and to serve them, which the Lord your God has given all the peoples under the whole heaven as a heritage. But the Lord has taken you and brought you out of the iron furnace, out of Egypt, to be his people, an inheritance, as you are this day. Furthermore, the Lord was angry with me for your sakes and swore that I would not cross over the Jordan, that I would not enter the good land which the Lord God is giving to you as an inheritance. You know, this may seem unfair, but it's a testimony as to God's judgment and words that are found in Luke 12, verse 48, where it says, "For whom to much is given, much is required." Much was required of Israel back then because of what God gave them to do. He was far from harsh when you saw the things that he did. And his mercy still runs the same to this day. As most of us will say, when we get before our knees, "God, forgive us, we don't deserve to be here." We are still working and changing, not just details, but our entire ways of looking at things, the application, the spiritual intent of God's law. Not just knowing or we can recite verbatim the Ten Commandments or understand about a Sabbath day. What about the Sabbath day? What about worshiping God? What about the depth? What's on our mind as we constantly go through this week after week and constantly are reminded about it? I know the way. We forget these things. And we come before, we'll open the hymnals and we'll sing because we're supposed to sing three songs when we start the service. And then I could ask you the question, what did we just sing? Many of us will go, "Yeah, you got a point there. I had to be reminded again. If I'm just singing hymns and my heart isn't going out to God, then it's kind of futile. We can sing words, but what's it mean to God?" All of us need reminders about that, and that's fine. But it causes us once again to do a deeper reflection in every day in the life that we're living to see what are we changing. We may know the Ten Commandments, we may know the laws of clean and unclean, we may know the holy days. What about all the other details? And God has given so much. Verse 23, he says, "Take heed to yourselves, lest you forget the covenant of the Lord your God, which he made with you, and make yourself the carved image in the form of anything which the Lord your God has forbidden you." Verse 40, he says, "And you shall, once again, you shall therefore keep his statutes and his commandments, which I command you this day, that it may go well with you and your children after you, that you may prolong your days in the land which the Lord your God is giving you for all time." Verse 40, maybe it's 40 is the trial and testing. Maybe there it is. I mean, you might be asking me, how many times are you going to repeat these verses? I will ask you, how many times do you think God had to repeat them? I'm just repeating what God did. These aren't my words, and I didn't come up with the repetition. So the question is, why did he put these in there time after time after time for us to read so that we don't forget it? And that we have it impressed within our mind that he says, when you keep my laws and my statutes and my testimonies, things are going to go well overall in your life. You're going to have a good life. Yes, it's going to be filled with all different things and trials that we have to go through. But overall, you're going to have a good and uplifting life. That you'll look back and go, my days were well served. And I look forward to even a better future. So we just read here of a witness, the testimony that God's laws, his statutes and commandments are given for the purpose of things going well and forgiving, for living a good and long life. Verse 44. So I'm not going to get to the fifth point because I know I'm running a bit late here. But again, I did want to emphasize this. Verse 44. Now this is the law which set before the children of Israel. Here's the greater encompassing, what's called law. Okay, within this law, he says, these are the testimonies, the statutes, and the judgments, and all those Hebrew words that would go along with it, kukah and mishpat. All these are here. Now, this is the verse, let's look at chapter 6, verse 1. Chapter 6, verse 1. Now, this is the commandment. So I'm going to read these for the last time here, maybe. There might be other words that are involved with this too. But again, look at how many times. Chapter 6, verse 1. Now this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and the judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess. Chapter 6, verse 1. Think about this in context that you're going to be teaching other people. If you're there, imagine that. Here's the millennial reign. You make it. You're a part of the restoration. Maybe you'll be saying the same thing. Now this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and the judgment, which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are going into to possess. That's exactly what's going to be happening. He's going to allow them to go back into their land, and Israel into their land, and it's all going to be based on the commandments, the statutes, and the testimonies, and the judgments. That you may learn to fear the Lord your God and keep all his statutes and his commandments which I command you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. Same thing. And now we've got a future context. Chapter 7, verse 11. Chapter 7, verse 11. Therefore you shall keep the commandment, the statutes, and the judgments which I command you today to observe them. It will come to pass, because you'll listen to these judgments and keep and do them, that the Lord your God will keep you the covenant and the mercy which he swore to your fathers. He'll love you. He'll bless you. He'll multiply them. He'll bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your land, your grain and your new wine and your oil, the increase of your cattle and the offspring of your flock in the land which he swore to your fathers to give you. And you'll be blessed above all peoples. There'll not be a male or female barren among you or among your livestock. And the Lord will take away from you all sickness and will afflict you with none of the terrible diseases of Egypt, which you have known, but will lay on them, on all those who hate you. So over and over and over and over, we find this instruction given that Israel was to keep God's statutes and his judgments and his commandments. If there's anything by the time you leave here and go, I heard statutes and commandments and judgments, the whole sermon, it's what God said. You'd have to ask, you know, you might ask, well, why'd he bring them up? Obviously, when you see repetition, I don't know if we see more repetition than when he talks about his laws and the intricacies of his laws. So it behooves us now, if you really want to get to know this and the specifics, I only went through you some specifics. There are so many others which we'll address in some of the other words. I need to save this for another time so I don't keep you here in all infinity. But let's keep this in mind, that it's not just for us learning now, for us to explain to others now as they, what do you mean about commandments? What do you mean about laws? Well, let's talk about this. That it's not only for the now, it's not only for the things that we have learned and the things that we're growing in, but you and I are going to become teachers of this. There will be laws and leadership in the kingdom, and these will be a part of it.